It's amazing that not so long ago, within my lifetime, scientists were talking confidently about conquering infectious disease once and for all. But it turns out viruses mutate, adapt faster than we can conquer them. Joining me now is Vincent Rocaniello, a professor of microbiology at Columbia University Medical Center. Early in his career, he pioneered a way to reverse engineer the genome of a virus to recreate it in the lab. And his technique was used to reconstruct the virus behind the 1918 Spanish flu, one of the deadliest modern epidemics. Vincent Rocaniello, welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure.
So that Spanish flu 100 years ago, the most deadly viral pathogen, one of the most deadly?
It certainly killed a lot of people, but I think HIV and the AIDS pandemic is ahead of it now.
So given how serious it was and how terrifying it was to our grandparents, tell me about the Spanish flu and why it was a thing that you virologists wanted to recreate.
Well, there's always the possibility that that particular strain or something like it might come back, so we really should know how it operates. Back in 1918, we didn't know about influenza virus. We knew viruses at that point. A few had been already isolated in laboratories, but not influenza. It wasn't until 1933 that we actually isolated the first human influenza virus. So here we are up until about 10 years ago, and we don't have that strain to study. And as I said, we'd like to know why it killed so many people, because no other flu strain since then has done that, and understand, if we could, how it did that, and then maybe be prepared for the next one, have some vaccines and antivirals ready.
So just a couple of weeks ago, the United States government's Office of Science and Technology released their draft of new guidelines for government-funded research. What are those guidelines calling for? How will they affect researchers like you?
So these are guidelines for institutions, universities, or other institutions that get federal money to do life sciences research. There's a list of pathogens and toxin on this document, and includes influenza H5N1, Ebola virus, and about 15 total viruses and toxins that government thinks are potential dual research use items. In other words, it's good to study these, and we'll learn good things, but the results could be used by someone to make a weapon, for example. So the guidelines say if you work on any of these 15 items, and then you do certain kinds of experiments, for example, you change the ability of a virus to transmit through the air, or becomes more virulent, or can infect different animals, you have to say, how are you going to work with these pathogens, what kind of containment you're going to use, and if something should go wrong, if they should escape, what are you going to do? What I think is missing is whether the results all can be published or not. And I think the document specifically stays away from that.
Can you imagine any scientific research in this realm, in your realm, that should be kept from publication?
No, I really cannot. I think the real scientists in the real world are working to help people. And it's the ones who want to make weapons elsewhere that don't follow the rules. And they're not going to certainly follow these U.S. government rules either.
But I mean, one can imagine, well, if everything is freely published, those bad guys, whether they're in terror groups or rogue states or whatever they are, this will only serve their ends if their end is to create various forms of bioterror weapons. I mean, moreover, could not you scientists just kind of keep it to yourselves rather than putting it out on the World Wide Web?
Well, if you keep it to yourself, you'd never know if the right scientist is getting the result. You know, that's the problem. Science always works best when information flows. Someone picks up a result inadvertently, and they have a new insight, and they think of an experiment that no one else has, and it pushes the field forward. So I think it's important to keep it open.
Right.
You know, you can't eliminate all danger, right? But I think you have to make a balance of the possible gains versus the possible dangers. And I think, you know, most of the threats from bioterror are quite small. They're not likely to happen. And so I would not like to see research impeded because we're worrying about a minuscule threat.
This tape may come back to haunt you when that happens.
That's fine. That's fine. I mean, I have to tell you my feelings. I mean, I've done this a long time.
Yeah.
And I know nothing is absolute, but, you know, you have to balance. And I see the balance far in favor of doing research.
Professor Rocaniello, thank you so much. This has been a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.
Vincent Rocaniello is a professor of microbiology at Columbia University. On our blog this week, a slideshow of creepy, beautiful sculptures of microbes, viruses, bacteria, modeled in clear glass. You can check those out at studio360.org.